If you want insight and solutions, you're in for a unique experience. One where you're free to ask questions about where you're stuck, ask and hear questions of an everyday variety, global or personal, deep or ancient. All questions are welcome. Any human issue or problem is seen with a new awareness from Patricia's powerful understanding of whole brain thinking. Receive insights you never thought were possible, and be comforted to hear some insights you always knew were right. Discover the profound and the creative value that problems can give us. And now, Patricia Sun.
Welcome to Trust the Problem. This is Patricia Sun. And today I'm going to be talking about, I think, something that, I always try to talk about something positive, but reality always requires that we look at sort of the shadow side of things so that we can mature and grow, and that's also part of reality. But the encouragement is in the process and in the understanding of the overview. So today, I'm going to talk about freedom and fear. I was going to say fear and freedom, but I decided to put freedom first because ultimately, when we process our fears, when we understand what fear is, we are left with freedom. That's how you get it. And I used to say years ago in my workshops that the way that a turtle, you know, with their shell carries their home with them, I said that's how we carry freedom with us. It's like it's our backbone. It's in us. It isn't so much what other people will do, though of course we all know that we can be harmed by other people, that the culture can hurt us, that the times can hurt us, that lies hurt us, betrayal hurts us, blah, 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 all those things. And it's all true, and I say blah, 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 I don't mean that it's not serious, it doesn't really hurt, it does, and that's part of what I want to talk about is how it hurts particularly the body, because the body has to hold that energy till your mind can process it. But the reason I said blah, blah, blah is because I don't want to concentrate too much on the scary part. We got enough of that sort of all around us. Although, I hope face everyone, and if you feel like calling in because you think I'm not touching the fears enough, and you maybe have some specific ones you'd like me to look at, I'd be very happy to do that. And you just call 1-877-230-3062. So it's 877-230-3062. Now, when looking at freedom and fear, as I started to say, it's like the turtle. It's its home. If the shell of the turtle is its home, the metaphor is that it's built into you. The backbone of the turtle is in the shell. It's all part of him. And he just pulls in when there's danger outside. And freedom is the capacity to pull in when there's danger outside and replenish yourself, protect yourself, heal yourself. And this is what the evolutionary leap is about that I teach for 35 years. I believe we're in the midst of truly a profound biological, emotional, psychological, spiritual, physical leap. And it's one of consciousness. And it's a capacity to perceive. So the way we are thinking is changing. I don't have the exact quote here. I should, from William James. It just came to me, one of my favorites, about the great gift or talent or benefit of our century or our generation is that, and of course he lived in the late 1800s, is that we can change our attitude of mind. Now, obviously, we're still learning how to do that, and we have lots of books and people who teach about manifesting and changing your attitudes, and it's all good to be able to see how that affects outcomes in life. But there really is more to it. And as you begin to grow, you begin to see it isn't just positive affirmations, though they're very nice, especially if you have a lot of negative ones running in your head because of your fears. But that's more to antidote those negative affirmations. Affirmations are not magic. They are merely a symptom of your thinking more clearly. and changing the orientation to the world. This is the secret information. This is the big piece that lets us realize that the dysfunction in every human endeavor, whether it's politics or race relations or religion or medicine or education or legal system or any human institution relationships, the problems are really come from fear that's not processed and the style of thinking that we adhere to that tends to keep us stuck in the fear. And that's why freedom and fear, from my point of view, go together. I remember when I was a little girl, I heard this great quote, and I later found out it was from William Shakespeare in Julius Caesar. But when he's disregarding, actually, his warnings from the prophet there not to go to the Capitol Senate, and where he's assassinated on the Ides of March. But the quote is, I don't know why I did that in, I guess it's just because sometimes it's real and sometimes it's not. But what he said, which is so powerfully true, and I've used it all my life because I heard it as a little girl and I remember thinking, wow, this is very big. Cowards die many times before their death. The valiant never taste of death but once. The way I heard it was, cowards die 1,000 deaths. The brave die but once. And it's true that when you're letting extrapolations of thinking patterns being based on your survival, like you're going to die if you don't do this, if you don't get an extra car, if you don't look pretty, if you don't, you know, all these superficial crazinesses we have in our culture right now that, you know, and not least of which is don't ever be wrong. So we have all this conditioning that's making us attend to superficial issues for our survival. And like a dysfunctional immune system, when you're attending to the wrong thing for your survival, you're putting your energy, your life force, your resources not only into the wrong thing, which causes a certain amount of mucking up and problems, but you're taking away your life force from the place where you need to have it to heal and make corrections and grow and understand. One of my favorite expressions that I made up a long, long time ago is correction at the source. When you correct things at the source, you have a much easier time of correcting. There's much less harm caused by any errors or mistakes. So when you notice your mistakes quickly and you move to address them, you have a powerful life. You have a lot of freedom. Because if you try to just avoid mistakes altogether, then you will be blocking life in the name of not making a mistake. Instead of stepping into life and making the mistakes that you inevitably must make when you are pioneering new territory or when you're being creative or when something comes to you for the first time or when you don't know deeply about something or you have missing information about something, which is what? Almost everything, all the time, and especially anything really important as life moves on. So we have to be willing to make mistakes. We just have to be willing to notice what feels a little off about them, or the adventure, the step that we take. If there's a little something missing, because sometimes I call it off, like off the mark, it's like the archery term for sin. That's what the word really means. It's from the Aramaic, and the Old English is the translation. Sin is the word for when you miss the bullseye, when you miss the target. And so being off the mark is a better understanding than something like sin out to get you, or you're just stuck with it, and that's done, it's done. It just means you're off target, and so try again and look more carefully. And in that way, we self-correct at the source, and we actually do indeed start not sinning. We start eliminating the thing that sin is, because even though we make mistakes, it is the willingness of our heart and mind and body and spirit to look at it that creates the freedom. So today I'm talking about freedom and fear, and how fear gets in the way, really kind of kills us. And of course, the very, very famous, beautiful, powerful quote, inspired for his time and his age and our age, was Franklin Delano Roosevelt's famous quote, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself." And in a very real way, he's so right, because fears, I used to say it's kind of corny, but they say in my workshop, like, you know, you need to have a certain amount of fear, right? Because if somebody, it's sort of like a cartoon image, but if you're walking down the street and somebody shoves a television out the window or a safe or something, and you look up and you see it, you need the adrenaline rush, you need the fear to move you out of the way. It's immediate, it's real, and the fear is a physiological, biological, emotional, chemical reaction in your body to give you extra resources to move. There's also the famous thing of fight or flight. When you're in a serious, dangerous situation for your survival, you have to either have adrenaline to fight, stand there and fight, or flee. Now, those are all immediate kinds of fears. The way Carl Jung talked about what I think I'm about to say is, he said, caution has its place, no doubt, but we cannot refuse our support to a serious venture which challenges the whole personality. If we oppose it, we are trying to suppress what is best in man, his daring and his aspirations. And should we succeed, we should only have stood in the way of that invaluable experience which might have given a meaning to life. What would have happened if Paul had allowed himself to be talked out of his journey to Damascus? So that's where he had his big epiphany, that instead of persecuting Jesus and Christians for being airy fairy airheads, he decided, oh my gosh, this is a revolution in thinking. This is a whole leap in consciousness. This is another way to look at it. And it's no longer about persecution. It's about loving and healing and transcendence. So this is the theme for humanity. As far back as pre-Christ and Buddha and further back 1,000 years than that, and to right at this moment, we as a species are learning to grow up and it digest this incredible brain, to digest this incredible talent, capability, and to just say intelligence or intellect or maturity, is like they're also pale for the real reality of what living life in earnestness as best you can, as you find it, where you are, being able to use this intelligence to keep track of past injury details and facts about past deceptions or difficulties or things that could happen that are harmful. Yes, keep track accurately, linear mind. Keep track accurately. But don't stop half your intelligence and your beauty and your wisdom by being afraid of your beauty and your wisdom. Trust that you can be inspired. Years ago, I did a quote about how what we really fear is our beauty. What we really fear is our magnificence, our wisdom, the awesomeness of our true nature. But that has gotten us killed over and over and over again throughout history, throughout humanity. Human beings turn on the inspired. They freak out when someone makes a leap in consciousness. You know, whether it's Copernicus or Galileo and Jesus being crucified, it does, you know, it's a theme. And right now, the whole human race, this is why I call it an evolutionary beat happening right now, the whole human race, every country, every nation, every ethnic group, every, I don't believe in race, because there's only one race, the human race, so, you know, whatever, any group of people, by any kind of definition that groups people up, everybody's working on this. And we are all in varying degrees injured. We are all in varying degrees old souls or new, however you want to say that. Some knowledge and trust about trusting the unfolding of things, trusting problems, trusting that things can unfold in a way that heals and empowers. And when we do this, when we know this, when we are really, really letting ourselves be alive, then we are free. It isn't about knowing everything. It isn't about nailing everything down. It's just about really trusting God. It's about allowing the nature of reality to unfold so we can be inspired, so we can know, so we can make this evolutionary leap, so we can allow ourselves to participate with God, with nature, with cosmic harmony, however you call it, the consciousness beyond us. That's what makes life exciting. Peace is not boring. Being good is not goody-two-shoes make nice. It is vital. It is alive. It is a power to be innocent, which means pure and open and capable of receiving without a whole bunch of defenses what's right in front of you, so that you make inspired, intuitive mind now, inspired insights, so realizations can pop into you, so they can just come. That's the nature of the intuitive mind and inspirational thought. So we are all in the midst of an evolutionary leap, everybody on the planet, and what we're being faced with, and it's very interesting, I think, that technology has come along with so many means to speed everything up. I was trying to describe to some kids in my family about how, and their friends, about how things were only 100 years ago, which isn't really that long. I understand the oldest lady, known living person, just died recently at 116. And, you know, the comment of the news, oh, you know, imagine what she's seen. Yes, imagine what she's seen. Imagine what she's lived through. You know, this, you know, slavery, slaves were still alive. People, everything was still exploding. The technology, the cars, the freeways, the buildings, exploding across the nation. And we're still exploding in population, in development, in growing. But we're starting to slow down. We've hit the Pacific Ocean. Everything's kind of like back wave back now, back to the East Coast. Everything's kind of like settling in. We now know the Earth is round. There's no more, you know, you just keep going and you find yourself again. In fact, one of the metaphors I used to give to help people understand this new level of thinking, that by timing for our species coming into being right now, I used to say, I'm standing on a stage, and so I have to kind of describe that because part of it's physically what I do. I would stand, say, to my left, and I'd say, if this is facing east, and you want to go as far west as you can go, the first thing we think of in a linear mind is going straight ahead and then having, you know, the cross over the oceans, over the world, and over the mountains, and over the ocean again, and then another more continents, and then back to where you are. But the truth is, when you have whole brain thinking, when you can see the overview, and you've actually only earned the capacity to do that when you have already faced east or west, as the case may be, we sailed west, and gone as far as you can go. But there comes a point when you truly, through experience, not intellectual idea, but through experience, you know the earth is round. And when you know the earth is round, to go as far west as you can go is all you do is turn around. And then you're as far west as you can go. This is a metaphor for a jump in holistic, holographic thinking, whole brain thinking, I used to call it. When you start to see everything at once, and that's very overloading at some level, and especially as you're making the transition and we're trying to hang on to being linearly correct and control everything and judge everything, and bureaucracies get more solid and people lie more because they need to be right more, and of course everything's going wrong more because everything's sped up. Technologically, we can make the mistakes faster. We can make them bigger. We can make blunders quicker. The president says, uses an unfortunate choice of words, and we're at war, because people get all excited real fast. Everybody feels threatened real very quickly. And everybody then wants nuclear weapons again after we've already sort of settled that down, went through that journey of processing it and finding out the Soviet Union was at least, if not absolutely, much more afraid of us than we were of them. And they were afraid because they lost 20 million people. And we lost less than in the American Civil War. The Iraqi war is now lasting longer than the Second World War. So we are, everything is like being compressed, expanded, just like all the computer technology. We're being able to face and get on the internet, find out about something, find somebody, meet something, when you need something or meet someone who you need to know. Everything is moving faster. I used to say, we need to have technology precede some of the talents we have inherent within us. Like the telephone, for instance. When we really have a capacity to be quite telepathic, not the same way as talking on the telephone exactly, but an energetic image and sometimes voice to in connection with someone at the same moment, you can connect to them. I do it all the time. And I've done it with my children all my life, and when I teach, I know, I used to say almost every workshop, I'm going to say things that I hope are helpful, logically and verbally, and give you ideas and concepts that I hope are healing and helpful. But I really know that the most important part of what I do is an energy that we feel together as I'm speaking. Now, that's a little bit more accurate than telepathy, because telepathy we tend to think of like the telephone, mechanical, or you read somebody's mind, and you just do it, you dial in, and you get it, and that's it, you just know. It doesn't work like that. Intuition is soft, subtle, and follows a wave and a flow that's way beyond us, and it's when we sort of step into that flow, we pick it up, so we don't have as much control about specifics. We can only sort of stay open and see what we get. That's the nature of the intuitive mind. That's why all the so-called scientific study that blocks out all fluidity and all synchronicity, trying to be scientific, can't really prove ESP, though statistically they do know it happens. So there are more talents, more abilities that we have, and as we begin to trust the flow of things, as we begin to sort of calm down from the overload of technology, which is speeding up the process, and by speeding up the process, we learn more fast, more quickly, faster, information comes in faster, we learn more quickly. At the same time, we are trying to digest more than we can all the time. And I say this with wanting to put a caveat to it. We are all under stress right now. Everybody. Even people who are living in a peaceful village somewhere. Let's imagine there is such a place somewhere. And they don't know everything that we're doing and that going on and how we're trying to, you know, the climate change and the global warming and the bombs and the wars and the flashpoints of and the unconsciousness and the toxicity of being blind, all the problems that's causing. They still know. They know at some level. So no matter where you are, who you are, everybody is feeling the impending change. That's why, you know, of course it's always been here, I would say, for the last 1,000 years, maybe even for the last 2,000 years since Jesus, people have had a sense of something big is happening. And 2,000 years is nothing in evolution, and it's nothing for a species. Now, we're a tremendously young species. We haven't been here very long compared to almost everything else. We're very new. So we are not complete yet. We are very immature, and I mean that in the kindest, fullest, most honest, technical way. We're not fully developed yet. And part of our development requires the synergy. And I see it like a synergy, like a quickening on the earth, where our fears and our freedom and our sense of self and our overload and our inspiration about how wonderful it could be are kind of all happening at the same time. That's why it's so overloading. That's why everybody is under stress. But the good news is, this is part of a natural stage of development. And sometimes people say, well, how do you know? I guess that's a fair enough question. It's a very fair question. I know because at some level I experienced it. At some level I kind of already did it. About 35 years ago, there's a period I used to call my opening. It was about 2.5 years. And for that 2.5 year period, it was, the analogy I used to give is like I was on an escalator that was going way too fast. And I was just struggling to stay in an upright position. And what the metaphor of this escalator going too fast was all kinds of psychic experience, intellectual. I was doing family counseling. I was investigating, how does this work? Why do people do this? And then I was opening to the more. I was beginning to figure it out. And as I started to figure it out, things changed around me. What happened to me changed. I couldn't have ever made things happen that happened, that were insightful, that were healing to the world, that were guiding me. It was important in this process for me to listen to that receptiveness. And part of it was that I didn't have to control everything. And in fact, by over-controlling, as almost everyone does, especially when it gets scary like this and lots of stuff is going on, you're gum up the works. And I also got the message, go low profile. Do everything you can, speak to anybody who asks you. And people were always startled. They could get me on the phone. I mean, I didn't get bugged too much because people just didn't dream they could get me. But the thing was that I was open. And I went wherever I was asked. I went to a little tiny town in British Columbia in the mountains. I did little villages around the world in different places, as well as, of course, big cities. Every state in the union, it happened all by itself. People went to workshops, told other people, ordered tapes, shared tapes, and other people just maybe never saw me, but they listened to the tapes. I know a lot of tapes were copied. I know I got plagiarized a lot, but that was all part of it. That was part of planting the seeds so everything could unfold. And you need to plant the seeds first, and you have to prepare the soil. The soil's been prepared for the last few thousand years. The seeds have been planted many times, really, but this is a different time. This is a time where we are, I don't know, I guess I could say, technologically able to be connected to everyone on the planet. Before, if any great insight happened in a small area, it would only happen in a small area, as far as everybody could talk to everyone, and the energy could connect, and then other people who would be fearful of that would come in and invade. You know, I think really the Golden Age of Greece, I think they got awfully close. Pericles, you know, women were free, they knew about the atom, they knew about medicine, they knew the earth was round, they knew the sun was the center of the solar system. They knew. They were open. They were living beautifully. They had radiant heating. They knew. But Rome didn't quite know. Rome was still power over. And they got extinguished. And I think in the early centuries of Egyptian, third, fourth, maybe fifth dynasty, there was a great harmony, the left brain, the right brain, with the earth, with intuition, great capacity to do operations, physical operations on people. They were astounded when they find bodies. Now, how they people survived brain operations, and they healed and grew and lived afterwards. So there's many things that have already happened many times. But this time, we can all get it at the same time, because we're connected. And there's another thing that I've taught for many decades that I think is really an important concept, and especially in creating the very powerful healing process through fears and through changing the world and really discovering true freedom for you personally and for our collective species. And that is the concept of matching energy. Now, matching energy I call an emotional law of the universe. And what matching energy is, and it works with animals, it works with all people. Sometimes it works better with animals because animals are not so intellectually, I blocked the word, I was going to say bigoted. They're not so intellectually snobbish, or they're not so intellectually rigid. That's a better word. They're not so intellectually rigid. So they don't have ideologies that prevent them from being present in the moment and updating, even when they have great fear. And I want to remember to tell you a story. I just saw on TV about the dog whispering. I read all notes, so I remember. And it's all part of this. So what matching energy is whatever you're feeling, you're sending. So when you feel fear, you send fear. And that is one of the quickest, most catching emotions that we can send. Why? Obviously, for our survival. So that we could notify one another, know when something is dangerous. Also, confidence is very catching and calming. Because if one of us is confident, especially if it's somebody who seems competent in the past, if they're confident, well then, oh, they know something we don't know. It's very much part of being a social being. But even animals that don't live socially as much as we do have this energetic, could call it telepathy, but it's not really just telepathy. It's an energetic connection that causes a match. Now, a match can be exactly the same or exactly the opposite. I guess using the example of somebody's very confident and then you see they're not very confident, then you get fearful. But to just for practical life, if you're saying to somebody, oh, I think you're wonderful, and inside you're thinking, but you're such a jerk. If you're thinking something not kind, or you don't like them, or you don't trust them, and your words are different, which is happening almost ad nauseum everywhere right now because of television, and because television is a filter. So you can script the words, hire actors to pretend to mean them, and play lots of music and flash lots of lights, and we can get distracted from the fact that it's a lie. Whereas if a person talks to us, it looks more boring, but you size the person up better. One of the reasons it looks boring is because most people are not being open energetically. When you're open energetically, it's not boring. It's, wow, what's going on? So the law of matching energy is a great power, and let me tell you how. If you learn, as Jesus and Buddha both taught, to love your enemy, and to learn to do that requires knowledge, it requires understanding, it requires letting go of being right, it requires letting go of fear and replacing it with love, and love is the most powerful antidote to fear. And when you have matching energy, someone's in fear, if you hold the state of calm love, they cannot stay in fear. They can try, and they can hold out. They can make it difficult by insisting on being fearful, and I've encountered people like that. It's very frustrating because they just insist on going back to being fearful. they run the tape through their head again and go, oh yeah, but this could happen. The sky could fall any minute. You know, we could have an earthquake any second. Yeah, we could, but we're not. And if we do, then we do, but we're not. But if we walk around worrying every second that we could, well, what are we doing? So matching energy is the power to transform emotional states. And if you are a whole brain thinker, if you are conscious, if you are sentient, if you are mature, what you want is healing. You want sanity. You want love. And you know that the greatest sin on earth is to promote fear. And the greatest holy gift is to heal it. So when we encounter someone who's being arrogant or nasty or dishonest or harmful, sometimes it's one of those circumstances where the safe is falling out the window and you better move fast. So you're entitled to a little bit of fear and get out of the way. But then stop and then send love. Because if you then stop and then send love, what you're doing is calming the energy. And it is the skill to know this, the willingness to do it, that's going to transform the world. And this is, you know, it's really not a new concept. It's only new in the reality of our time. We don't really live it. We don't really get it. When Jesus says, love your enemy, I mean, think how many Christians who think they're Christians are just wanting to go kill people or judge people or hurt them or put them in prison or harm them and expel them. And we have had the Inquisition, many of them, really. What is that? That's fear. And that's fear that what Jesus said isn't really true. Because when you know it's really true, then what happens is you love. And when you're injured by someone, you don't like it. Your body doesn't like it. Your mind doesn't like it. All your old defenses come flying up to defend you. Fair enough. This is the process towards freedom. You have to know that's okay. It's just you don't want to stay stuck there. You want to be able to know that if you can process within yourself a comprehension of what that person is actually doing and what liabilities may be in your way or not, and do what is good and wholesome for its own sake, because it's freedom, because it's powerful, because it's healthy. And when you do something good for its own sake, you don't just say, oh, it's good to bomb them. No, that's not good. Good is where people are healed. And you do it at the source of your ambition, the source of your volition, the source of your life force, and how you move with it through time, with people, in your mind, in your body, with one another. And you practice in your relationships when you get very annoyed with somebody you live with, or who's a relative who, you know, not someone you're fond of, who's harmed you perhaps greatly in life, actually. You don't have to make nice to them. You don't have to, forgive them like from La La Land. You have to learn that by forgiving them and letting go of the injury, you are freed. It is up to them to rectify the wrong that they did. And when you really let go, you have the capacity to almost say what's true, what they did, for instance, which has probably got the whole family in denial, perhaps, you know, because it's too awful. It's called criticizing. No, it's not criticizing in that demeaning, damaging way. It is critiquing in the sense that what the word critique means is to observe what's wrong. You have to be able to observe what's wrong, have good judgment, but not be judgmental. There's the difference. This is the leap in consciousness. This is the freedom. And this is how you transform fears, because fears always come because we feel trapped. We feel powerless. We feel like there's nothing else we can do. And when we have that fear, that's when human beings are the most vicious, the most dangerous, the most harmful, the most damaging, and the most likely to cause there to be war and brutalization and injustice at every level. That's what happens. I mean, that's so self-evident that, you know, I don't even need to spend too much time on that. But the only reason we stay stuck there, like that's sort of inevitable, so we have to still be fearful and we still have to be mean and vicious and start wars. The only reason we stay there is because it is a failure of our human intelligence to expand to what I think is one of the most powerful forms of our intelligence, and that's love. So what matching energy is it is the physical, biological, emotional, mental ability to stand in a healing, healthy, mature state and let people catch it. You don't need to beat people on the head. You can negotiate, you can talk, you stay calm, you don't engender fear. I did mediation when I was in Geneva as a delegate to Women's Spiritual Leaders Conference that they had, honoring women spiritual leaders. I have to always say, because they had one for men, the women got obsessed with, and they had one for women. And I was very grateful to be invited. And there was a delegate, two delegates, a Palestinian and Israeli, and they were always arguing. Every meeting, every group, and they could not help themselves. You could see it. They could not help themselves. No matter what one said, the other one just had to say, yes, but you did this. You did this. You hurt us this way. And they each were right. But that didn't help. And so I asked if they'd do some conflict resolution with me, and they did. And when we were together, and it took about 3.5 hours that we're actually together, and they both said before, it said, this will never work, never work. And I said, well, you know, it might not, but it's worth trying. It's worth doing, would you? And they said yes, so they came. And at the end, they both said to me in private, you know, this kind of mediation would work if we had someone like you that we could trust. And the thing that is the point here, and that honors the process, is that I equally loved both of them, and I equally wished both of them well, and I equally wanted them both to be free of being harmed, and I equally wanted their children to be safe, and I equally wanted neither of them to be bombed or damaged anymore. And that's the place of freedom, where you neutralize the fear, because they can telepathically, energetically, matching energy, intuitively, however you want to say it, they can tell that I am for them, that I wish them well, truly. And that's the freedom of matching energy. That's what causes to come into being this evolutionary leap. That is what creates the kingdom of heaven on earth. That's a new kind of thinking. I noticed my little note here. I wanted to talk about a little scene I saw. I got the Dog Whisperers DVD. I'm always promoting the Dog Whisperer because I love the program. It's the only real, true reality show on TV. And the reason for it is because in a very, and it's interesting, when I say simple, that are very pure are often very simple. Innocence is simple. Even when it's dealing with great, huge complexity, the energetic approach is simple. It's called open, willing to trust, loving, present. That's the description. And what I love about Caesar Marin is that he does this with dogs, and he shows people through matching energy, by doing it actually, which is the only way you can do it, is by doing it. He does explain, he does give them ideas. As I said in my workshop, I give ideas and I explain matching energy, but the only thing that makes the energy change is the experiencing of it. And people see him be with dogs that are just very neurotic, very fearful, very aggressive, very unable to be controlled by everybody. And he sees, and everybody sees that in a few moments sometimes, but certainly minutes, that these animals, at least with him in those moments, overcome it. It's matching energy. And there was this, I got the DVD, and to recommend. And it's a four-part thing. It's got all the shows and some of the outtakes. And in the outtake, they show the full process he went through with this beautiful black Great Dane. And this is the story that I wanted to share with you. And I saw the original program where there was a woman, I don't remember what kind of work she did. She worked in a, I don't know if it was a hospital or some home. They had older people, children. And they had very shiny floors, linoleum shiny floors, glass doors, you know, entering into the building, and all the floors were this shiny linoleum. And she wanted to be able to bring the dog with her to work because it was allowed and because it was helpful for the patients and everything, or whoever they were, students. I'm sorry, I don't remember. But so she calls in Cesar. I speak Spanish like you wanted to say Cesar. I know it's not affected. Anyway, she calls him in to help, and he's got this dog, and the first time he starts to run down the sidewalk and run up the steps, and he has to pause to open the door, and in the moment it takes him to open the door, to pay attention, I would say, to opening the door and the difficulty of opening the door, he stops the flow of connection that he had with the dog. Moving forward, dog being a dog, in energy, comfortable with Caesar, everything's okay, here we go, and they start to go in, but as he opens the door, the dog balks, you know, nope, not going in there, that's the shiny floor place. So in the same few minutes, he takes a few minutes, and I love it in the outtake, because you see it, they don't have to go so fast, they wait, because they show how in 10 minutes he heals this dog. And I say heal, I think that's the correct word. So anyway, he goes out, walks him obviously out the side of the camera view for a while, and then he comes running back in, and he's already now told everybody, leave the door open. So he comes running up the steps, and he runs to the door, and he gets just that little bit of momentum so that the dog goes through the door, and he's onto the shiny floor. And he's standing there, trembling, and his legs are kind of splayed. And as he's standing there, Caesar doesn't force him. He stops. And he waits, and he sends him calmness. He sends him confidence. He sends him all his knowledge that this floor is okay. And I know it's scary, and I know you're afraid, and I'm going to respect that. But I'm just going to stand here with you for a little while. He doesn't say any of this, but I'm filling this in because this is matching energy. This is how you do it. And so he stands there with him, and the dog, you know, starts what we would call sweating profusely, but he's drooling. I mean, the saliva is like pouring like this little spigot out of his mouth. And he is in shock. He, whatever trauma he experienced that the shiny floor means is being relived. He is in total fear. And he's stuck because he's already on the shiny floor. This is going through the portal of your greatest fear and how you find your fondest dream. And what it is for him is that Caesar just stays with him, kind of pulls him a little, and he's just still in fear, and he's can't even walk on it. And then Caesar's starting to get tired, I guess, standing. So he gets a chair and he sits down. The dog sees him sit down. He goes, oh, good, we're going to rest. So he forgets everything. He gets cued by reality. Caesar's sitting down. So he takes about two steps that are more relaxed steps, which, of course, would be normal steps, which he could walk. And Caesar, you can see in a flash, he picks that up. And then he moves the chair back a little bit. So he's then having the dog walk by moving the chair back. So he's like giving him a little safe perimeter, baby steps. I always used to call it, take baby steps. Do something that you're afraid of in a small, in a control situation, in a little step. Sometimes just think it. Imagine it. People go numb. They can't think just even imagining something that's fearful to them. But this is how you wear it out. I used to call it, you wear it out. You extinguish the fear. You relive it to relieve it. And so this is what he's doing. And then eventually he gets up from the chair and the dog's getting a little bit more calm. And then he kind of like says, ah, come on, you can walk with me. And he starts slightly dragging him, but not too much. Like, okay, you've had enough time to assimilate that. Now let's go do it a little bit more. And he basically takes him down the hall and he goes back and forth down the hall. Then they get the owner. And in 10 minutes, the dog is walking on the floor. And then in the show, they showed times where he was, you know, dog was coming into the place where she worked and meeting people. And he found his fondest dream. He got to stay with his owner, meet new people, not be afraid of shiny floors. By going through the portal of his greatest fear. This is how we find our fondest dream. And every one of us, bar none, has to do this about something, many somethings. And the more important the something, you know, the more it's become important because we've been holding off, we've been afraid, we've blocked the portal. And I would say, dare say, that the whole problem of the human race, we're at this portal. We're at this portal of our greatest fear. And it's that we're going to lose control. And we're trying to control the environment. We're trying to control energy. We're trying to control people. We're trying to get money so we can, because our illusion is if we have all this money, we'll control everything. Well, you control a lot with money. Money is given that power. But we made it up and we gave it that power. We can take the power away from it in a second. We can claim the power of the power, which is to go right ahead and heal. Go right ahead and tell the truth. Go right ahead and make things better. So we are in the midst of an evolutionary leap. And it can happen very fast. It can happen in a 20-year time frame. I had a premonition about that. I haven't told it for a long time, and it was a premonition about how this was all going to happen. It's when I was first opening, and I was thinking, how can I teach all this? It all seems too big, you know. We don't have to war. We can heal. We can heal physically. Physically heal each other. We can, you know, I thought, how am I going to teach this? This is just too much, you know. Just too much. And so I remember meditating, deep meditation, saying, okay, how am I supposed to do this? You know, I'm sort of like a closet psychic in Berkeley. It's just too much for me. You know? Oh my God, how am I going to do this? And the first thing I got was, and I wasn't asking how I should do it. That was inside the question. I asked, what do I need to know? That's a good question. I was asked, what do I need to know? And the first thing that came up, I said, what am I supposed to do? And I said, okay, what am I supposed to do? And then the words popped up in my mind's eye. I could see them clearly in my mind, and I could hear it. And it said, to end wars. And I went, oh, give me a break. To end wars? Here I am, this closet psychic in Berkeley, and what do you mean, to end wars? You know, I don't even know how to begin to do that. And my mind said, don't get so carried away with yourself. Relax. See what that means. So I went right back into that deep state. I said, what does that mean? And then I saw a picture of the earth, beautiful, radiant, blue, green, white, alive. It was awesome. And my heart throbbed. I was stunned by the beauty of the living earth. And as I looked at the earth, I saw like a cylinder of gold-white light coming down to the earth. And then there were other cylinders of gold-white light sort of coming to the earth. And as I looked at the first one. I looked at it, and then there was a face, a countenance. I couldn't tell if it was male or female. It was a beautiful face. And as I looked at this beautiful face, I realized, experientially realized, that this person had learned how to love themselves completely while in a body. And then this person just turned to someone who was not lit and looked at them with such love and understanding, because they'd gone through the journey. They looked at them with such love and understanding. The person felt it, and they became a light. And then they turned to someone else, and then they turned to someone else. And then there was like a critical mass on the planet, and the whole world was lit. And the words popped up 20 years. And that premonition has impelled me, compelled me, taught me, brought me, moved me, guided me from the moment I had it. And it made me realize that you didn't have to have an organization. You don't have to have rules. You don't have to have dogmas. You don't have to control people. You don't even have to worry about whether they, quote, get it. You just have to be it as best you can, as much as you can, as often as you can, and people will feel it. And it isn't a constant state where you just land. I realized it ebbs and flows. It comes and it goes. Comes and it goes. And the same metaphor holds is you have to remember what it was like when you had it to bring it back. It's like feeling that energy again. That is the healing power of matching energy. And it can happen globally in 20 years' time, especially now with all the technological support we have. If we would use it well, of course we use it basely. You know, we use it for all our dysfunction. Not only, of course, but tremendously. So we are really in this midst of this great leap. And the freedom and the fear are released by love, by released by freedom, by they're released by the process of feeling the love, feeling the goodwill for yourself, for your own process. Give yourself a break. You know, you're going to be overloaded. Your memory's going to go. It's not all Alzheimer's, and although I think Alzheimer's comes from trying to block out thought. But when you, along with other physiological reasons, but when you are willing to not be in denial, gently, slowly, carefully, tenderly, give yourself a break, you will be healing your fears. And you will be healing the greatest fear, which is to be radiant and beautiful and be all that you really are and love other people. That is the evolutionary leap. That is coming home. Thank you so much for being with me. And this is one of the simple examples of really trusting the problem. Much love.
You've been listening to Trust the Problem with Patricia Sun. This program and its content is copyrighted to Patricia Sun, all rights reserved, 2006.